Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from BreezeLine. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.
My name is Keegan Michael Key, and I feel overwhelmed about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, my podcast. I'm the aforementioned Conan O'Brien, and very much enjoying doing this show, really having a good time. Joined by my team here, Sonam Avsesyan, my assistant now of a decade, is that right?
11 years.
It's been 11 years, wow,
yeah,
that's right.
It's a long time.
That's a long time. We've had some ups. We've had some downs.
Yes.
But we always stick together.
Pals till the end.
And yeah, it could end at any time. And Matt Gourley, our producer.
Yeah.
Matt, now here's where things are different. I chose Sona.
Right.
Sona was a choice that I made.
Yeah.
Maybe a right choice, maybe a wrong choice, mm-hmm. but it was a choice that I made. I interviewed different candidates and
right
I said,
choice.
This one right here, she seems responsible. and so that's on me.
Come on.
You were thrust upon me.
Yeah,
by,
same here.
By the podcast people. There are all these podcast people that said, yes, Conan, you'll have a podcast. And I said, well, I don't know. I'll give it a shot. It seems kind of interesting. I can try. Oh, yes. You have a podcast, Conan, and it'll all be handled by this gentleman. And they literally opened a door and you came walking in. And and I said, what's this? And they said, it's an Adam Gourley.
Adam Gourley?
What the fuck?
His name is Matt.
Oh, shit.
You got Adam.
We
you
both
combined
got
Adam and Matt.
You know what? I'm going to be honest. You guys are sort of interchangeable to me.
Wow.
You're just the podcast guys.
Yeah.
So Adam Sachs was the one that brought you in. He was the one saying, here's the one. And then, so, yeah. I mean, I have to say, you're just the podcast people.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to demean you in any way.
No, it doesn't sound that way.
No. You're these.
No, it sounds pretty complimentary.
No. Yeah. It's like, what are those things, those dementors in Harry Potter that float above you that are all in black robes? You don't know which one is which. You just know they're dementors.
Right.
They suck the life out of you.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Don't you know what dementors is? Anyone here?
Yeah.
Do you know what dementors are? Blay, lean in.
Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, they guard the prison. They're the guards and they float like you explained.
Yes, they're these black floating shapes. They can suck the life out of you and make you so filled with just misery and sadness that you want to die.
That seems like an appropriate description.
I was just grabbing the first description that came to my mind.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't, but anyway.
Also, I was sort of tricked into this job. I didn't really, you know, get to choose it either. They revealed my little role in stages where first I was just consulting and then it was meet Conan and then it was come down and see if you can do this. And so it just, you know.
Oh, and you weren't super excited to meet Conan O'Brien? Right, Sona? Sona? Oh. Come on, you didn't go home and high-five your wife and go, I got to meet
the man.
I, first
of all, never once high-fived my wife.
All right, well, there's no love in that marriage, clearly.
It's all about the high-five.
Gourley, you know I love you and I admire you.
What's
and
my first name?
I'm not sure. Ron Rolled.
Roll.
As in Roll Dahl.
Yeah.
You're terrific. I just was making the point that you were brought to me and assigned to me.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of chained together.
It's true, yeah.
There's a famous movie from the 60s where Sidney Poitier is chained to Tony Curtis, the Defiant Ones.
Mm, yeah.
And they kind of hate each other, but they learn to get through the swamp together because they're escaping. So that's you and me,
yeah, that feels pretty right on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am Sidney Poitier.
Do I have to be here?
What's that?
What?
You're probably one of the hounds chasing us through the swamps.
Come on.
Hurrah! you're chasing me around the office all day long.
I am trying to do my job. And you're like, oh, you always have something to ask me. It is my actual job to ask you things. And I'm doing it. You're getting angry at me for doing my job. That's
okay.
All.
True story. Today I came in, and at one point, Sona got this delivery of really good-looking sushi to her desk, and she started happily eating it. And I said, oh, man, that looks good. I'm really hungry. And she's like, well, what do you want to do about lunch? And I was like, when you were ordering the sushi, did you think for a second about saying, hey, Conan, I'm ordering some sushi from this really good sushi place. Do you want some? Did that even occur to you?
It did not, because every time I ask you if you want something that I'm ordering, you're like, no, you never want to eat where I'm eating from, so I stop asking you. That's all. That's it.
I think I hit a real nerve here.
You didn't.
I did.
No, you didn't. I don't care. I had the sushi and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, can I mention something really quickly? Yes. That you've been rattling the table this entire time, and it only stops when you get to speak. Have you noticed that?
I think time when I'm not speaking is wasted time. Exactly. And it fills me with anxiety and rage. So when I'm talking, I feel like all is right with the world and people are getting what they tuned in for. You know, I can't handle it. So I'll try to get that under control.
Okay.
I also stopped using cocaine 2 days ago. So give me a break. I'm new to all this.
Okay.
All right. Let's get started. Is that enough or do we need more?
That's plenty.
I'm good.
And you could.
I'm so sorry.
My guest today is a very talented actor who co-created and co-starred in the hit Comedy Central series Key and Peele. He also starred alongside Eddie Murphy in Dolomite Is My Name. You can now see him in the new Netflix movie All the Bright Places and as host of the National Geographic show Brain Games. I am very excited he's here with us today. Keegan Michael Key, welcome, sir. Now, I'm looking at you, and I see fear.
Did you see fear in my eyes?
I see...
It's funny, because I was trying to give off glee. So
what
does it say about me?
No, you look like Ted Bundy giving off glee. I'm going to shoot some glee at you, and then they'll never find you. No, thank you so much for being here.
I do like the Ted Bundy Harvard reference. That's good.
Oh, yeah.
You're a Harvard guy, so I expect so many of those in this interview. I mean, in this podcast. It's not an interview.
I know. I majored in serial killers.
You did?
Okay. Yeah, very prolific.
Bundy, Gacy.
Yeah.
That other guy.
That one other guy.
That's all you know?
I did not major in serial killers.
Where's your Hillside Strangler?
Zodiac. I mean, where's that guy?
There you go. Oh, see?
Boston.
Yeah.
Boston Strangler. Yep. It's funny. All I see in my head is Tony Curtis. I just see Tony Curtis.
That's right.
Tony Curtis.
It really creeped me out.
Boston Strangler.
Fans who are listening, they cast Tony Curtis to play the Boston Strangler.
I'm going
to
kill you. I'm the guy. You're dead. I've killed you. I've got my hands around your neck.
It's very strange casting. I sensed him wanting to branch out. Tony Curtis.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah. And it's funny, I was working on a project earlier this year that was based on a TV show that Tony Curtis was in the 70s, in the early 70s. There was one season on ITV in the UK called The Persuaders. It was him and Roger Moore.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny, apparently a lot of it was improvised, and he was a real kind of loose actor, Tony was. And Roger was very, very, you know, wooden, and I really think it's important to learn the lines, you know.
Sure.
Do you, Roger? I hate you. You know.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I remember Tony Curtis was in, what's that show that took place? Oh, it was called Vegas.
Vegas.
And it was about Dan Tana
was the lead, and Robert Ulrich.
Yeah, Robert Urich.
Robert Urich.
Robert Urich played this detective who lived in Las Vegas. And one of the things is that every now and then he would go to this guy named Roth, like when the chips were really down and needed help. And it was played by Tony Curtis. And you just didn't know who Roth, you just were like, wait a minute, the chips are down, so he's going to a 70-year-old Tony Curtis for help. That's what it looked like.
That's what it always looked like, yeah.
And he was like, hey, you know, I'll try and help you out. You know, and it was just like,
I'll do the best I can. My Tony Curtis has just a dash of Jackie Mason in it.
And a little dab of Sylvester Stallone.
A little bit of Sylvester Stallone. Now that's a cocktail I'll drink. You know, I love that you said Vegas. I said Dantana. You said Robert Urich. Sona doesn't know what's going on.
No, no, no.
It's just Robert,
you know,
Sona.
I'm
Robert
a
Urich.
Little lost.
Sona's
Spencer
here.
For hire. Yeah.
Listen, listen.
That's my second Harvard reference of the
this show
the podcast.
This podcast often goes off the rails with insane
really?
Digressions, and it's old references.
Oh,
and,
fantastic!
And so the next thing you know, I mean, I've been on this. We've been doing this show just about a year and a half now, but. You know, I keep forgetting, like, podcasts, it's a younger medium.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll realize, they'll tell me afterwards, you just did a 10-minute run on Rudy Valley. And I'm like, button up your overcoat when the wind blows free. Take good care of yourself. You belong. And you know what's weird is I grew up, I don't know how you grew up, but I grew up out of my own time, meaning I grew up, I came of age in the 70s, and so what I'm supposed to what's supposed to happen yeah. is I'm supposed to be listening to 70s bands like Kiss, you know, and
of course,
and I'm supposed to be in my time. I was not. I always listened to music that was like 20 years or 25 years from before me.
I did the same thing.
And I watched movies from when I that were made in the 30s that they showed on local television.
Right.
And so I used to sort of talk like a guy in the 30s when I was a kid. And so Jimmy Cagney in some of his movies would come into a room, and he was always very fast talking.
Yeah.
So he'd come into a room and he'd go, "Hey, Padre, what do you hear? What do you say?" And I thought, that's the coolest thing in the world. So in 1977, like the set, you know, like punk rock is
right.
I'm walking into rooms going like, "Hey, Padre, what do you hear? What do you say?
What's the rumpus?
Yeah. Yeah, what's the rumpus? What's the news? What's the weather? Hey, Wrigley, 555.
Wrigley, 555.
You know,
Eldorado, 4268.
Yeah, yeah. And so I grew up. And couldn't relate. And so tell me how
I
sense a kindred spirit.
Yes, I was 20 years out of my time. I grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I was in middle school like in 81, 82, 83. So I am a 60s guy. 60s music and early 70s music is my favorite music. And then I stopped. I bought some new music. Like I liked the Smiths, you know, in the 80s because my best friend liked the Smiths, right?
So and you
liked,
thought you were being radical.
I thought I was being super radical liking right. the Smiths. And I didn't know Kokomo by the Beach Boys, but we were singing it.
You're
and,
not cool.
Yeah, I was.
Hey, you're real square.
You
don't
see
know
how
Kokomo.
Uncool I am? That I didn't know the squarest pop song that was on the hits, on the hit parade. I'm a hit parade, see? And I was a 60s guy. I wore fringe and moccasins and denim jackets. Like,
oh, wow.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
yes.
Mwah! Love it. Like, that's right. That's my jam. Vanilla, you know.
It's not the time you grew up in. Not, it's the time you think you grew up in.
It's the time I think I grew up in.
Right.
And so Jimi Hendrix is my favorite recording artist. Hands down, my favorite recording. Oh. I was the easiest kid to shop for a birthday party. You just come to my birthday party. It was just books and 45s. Remember 45s? 45s. Jimi Hendrix. Everything was Jimi Hendrix. And then, but then I branched out to the Doors and then I like psychedelic stuff, Strawberry Alarm Clock. And I always listened to our local, in Detroit, our local classic rock station. So that was always my time. And then when I auditioned for Mad TV, mm-hmm. you had to do like three impressions. One of my impressions for my audition was David Carradine's Quatchang Kane from the television show Kung Fu.
Yeah.
That was one of my, I was like, oh my so for God. My next impression, I'd like to do Quatchang Kane from the TV show Kung Fu as portrayed by David Carradine. Excuse me. I mean you no harm. That's it. That was, and then my other.
And that, wait, and did they even know what you were talking about?
So the executive producer was like, I produced that show. You know, but so that worked to my advantage. But then one of my other impressions, Antonio Vargas was Huggy Bear on Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
Oh God, who played?
I can help you.
Gregory Sierra, who played Julio on Sanford and Son.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Mr. Stafford. Mr. Stafford.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Those are such specific
are
impressions.
Are you kidding me? Like, I'm like, oh I mean, they God. Were, I was in, it's like, I wasn't in a lane. I was on the yellow line. I was only allowed to drive on the yellow line.
I only did one impression.
Oh, my God.
In all my years, I did one impression, and it was before people were, I mean, he's more of a known person now, but for years, before anyone was talking about George Takei.
Yes.
From Star Trek?
Yes.
I used to do a George Takei, and it was very specific because when I was on The Simpsons, I wrote an episode, and in it we tried to get George Takei, and I think I remember talking to try and get him to do
the episode.
Right.
And he I think it involved a monorail, and he didn't want to do it because he was on the board of public transportation in San Francisco.
Amazing.
And he felt that this made fun of public transportation.
Amazing.
You're like, really? You don't want to be on The Simpsons? But anyway, George Takei, I think I was talking to him, and he was like, I'll never forget what he said. He said he was also very busy, that he was in a production of Aladdin.
Oh.
And he said, I'm sorry, I can't do it, Conan. I'm in a production of Aladdin. And get this, I play the genie. And that's what he said. I spent four or five years of my life walking around going, do you want to hear my George Takei? And they'd go like, who's that? And I go, you know, Sulu from Star Trek. And they go, okay. And I go, I'm in Aladdin. And get this, I play the genie. And people were like, I thought you were going to say like phasers on stun.
Exactly.
I was doing an impression of something from my life that no one could ever give a shit about.
I do the same thing. Now I'm going to get weird and twisty here. I do the same thing, and I'm only recalling in this moment that I remember Dan Castellaneta was on a talk show one time years ago. It might have been Letterman. And he was on a talk show. And I remember they said, do you do impressions? And he said, I do an impression. It was like his fifth grade math teacher was like on TV. So he did. I'm sure it was spot on. But here's mine. Because you like, I love how you manufactured a catchphrase that for yourself that
for
no
myself.
One else would know.
Right.
My manufactured catchphrase is when Jordan and I were doing Key and Peele, we did a sketch called The Laundromat, which, and the premise was great. The premise was that, you know how a barbershop is where everything happens in black culture. It's for the black men. It's going to the barbershop. And Jordan was playing this really sad, tragic old man who's like, hey man, you know how everything's going on at the laundromat? It's at the laundromat. And I was his nephew. I'm like, you know, Uncle Cassius, he's like, what's going on, Nathan? And I said, hey, I just feel like there's not a lot going on here today at the laundromat. He goes, come on, you know it's going to start popping off at the laundromat. And then I look across the street, and there's a barbershop across the street, and I'm trying to be a good nephew, but they're having a great old time at the barbershop.
Yes.
Like a grand old time.
And great wisdom and wit is being dispensed.
And that's my brother, you know. And then, ping, ding, 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 door opens, right? In walks Billy Dee Williams. And now I'm like, oh no, it's Lando. I gotta go over there. Right. Billy Dee, who's also in Nighthawks and the Billie Holiday movie. Latest Sings the Blues. And he's Lando. Okay. So he really had a hard out. I mean a hard out that day. And my Billy Dee Williams is always about he drove up to the set, and I came out of my trailer as he was trying to, and the base camp PA walked up to him, and he's like, good afternoon, Mr. Williams. It's a pleasure to meet you. I'm Elliot. I was wondering, did you bring any wardrobe with you? Billy Dee Williams just looks at me and goes, you're looking at it. And then walks through his trailer. And I was
like, Billy Dee Williams.
Because he's Billy Dee Williams. This is what he's wearing.
Right.
But then he had a really hard out that day. We had to be stringent about his 1 p.m. out. And so he's on set, and we're all standing around. He's just like, Peter, I just need to know what time it is because I got to go. He's like, we're almost there, Billy. It's about 12:10. So we got about 40 minutes and we'll have you wrapped out of here. All right. Sounds good. Is that the 110 right there? Is that the Santa Monica Freeway? pretty easy. How far are we from base camp? Like, I promise we're going to get you out of here. It's like a couple more things. It's just that I got to go.
Yeah.
Is that clock right? I'm like, Billy, just focus up with us, man. Just stay with us, please. I don't know. How you doing, Chewbacca? That was my favorite thing, is that Billy Dee Williams is such a badass. He did not give a shit. You know, somebody told Billy. Someone said to Billy, it's pronounced Han. It's Han Solo.
Right. Okay.
All right, I got it. Action. What's going on, Han? He doesn't give a shit.
And he's not going to change.
He's not changing that. How you doing, Chewbacca? Chewbacca.
You know that he was telling Lucas, I got to go. No, this is the second. The first one was the biggest movie ever made. We're now making the second, which arguably is going to be more critically acclaimed and even more successful and cement this as the greatest franchise in
cinematic history. I hear what you're saying.
You can be him.
I'm listening, George.
Listen, Billy Dee, so glad that you signed up to do
Me
this.
Me too.
Okay.
In Lady Sings the Blues.
Yes, yes, we all know Billy. Listen, George Lucas here. It's so nice to see you. And
pleasure to meet you, George.
Okay, as you know, the first Star Wars biggest movie ever made.
I am aware.
Yeah, have you seen it?
No, sir.
Billy, I'm sure you'll get around to it. This is the second one. This is Empire Strikes Back, and you are the pivotal role in this. This is huge. Huge, and today's scene is very, very important. This is where you betray Han Solo, and it's a huge moment. We want to get this right.
Is that clock right? Because I got a clock. You know, everything on his head. If you say the Empire Strikes Back, it's like he goes, who struck the Empire? And why are these guys so upset that they're going to strike back?
Well, it's the Empire is really bad. You don't need to know that, Billy.
I don't. Okay. Okay. Where do I live? What's this place
this
called?
This is a place that's in the sky. It's a cloud city.
Cloud City?
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Am I going to get to talk to that little filly, Carrie Fisher?
No. You have more of a paternal role with her.
I see.
Yeah.
In the film, you mean?
Okay, Billy.
Okay,
this is okay now, but you know, 30 years from now, this is going to be a problem, Billy.
Sorry, I got off track. Yeah. Could you imagine? I mean, like, even back then, Billy Dee Williams could have gotten Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
He was super. He's still super suave.
He's incredibly suave.
Yeah.
Did you see the last one? I'm guessing,
just saw the last one. Yeah. The Rise of Skywalker. Yeah.
Yeah. And what they love to do in these ones is they love to have people come back. You get a charge when he comes back in. You,
absolutely.
Because, oh my God, and the whole theater claps.
Yep, yep.
But then he keeps peeking back in. I was in the old one. And now I'm
still here.
And I'm still here.
You take it, I guess it's the Millennium Falcon, you're taking good care of my girl. You know, I remember, I know that it was his ship. If you're my age, you don't have to tell me.
Right.
All that intertextuality is for the younger fans, you know. I'm old.
Do you remember the ads that he used to do for Colt 45 beer?
Colt 45, Schlitz malt liquor beer. Goes down smooth. Schlitz malt liquor beer.
But I hope I get some money from them. But he would, it was a can of beer.
Yeah.
Just a Colt 45, but in that moment you realized he could literally sell anything.
Anything.
I mean, that guy could have just said like, hunk of dung.
Yeah, you know? Right. Exactly. Like, if you want hunk of dung, comes in three sizes. Pebble.
If you have a lady coming over,
you want to have a very discreet hunk of dung. Comes in three sizes. Pebble. Pile. And there's another P word that I haven't heard.
You know, you did,
shit.
You guys did so many sketches. I loved how smart your writing was. And obviously, you're killer performers, but the writing, and you did a sketch, and I've quoted this, I've misquoted this sketch many times because it's one of my favorite sketches. The guy on stage, the comedian on stage who insults people in the crowd.
Oh, God, the insult comic, yeah.
The insult comic, and he's insulting people in the crowd, and then there's a guy who's insulting everyone, but you're wisely avoiding a burn victim in the crowd.
Who, by the way, has been burnt so badly, he's in a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair.
Like, it got down to the nerves.
Yeah. And so he's horribly disfigured, and I love that the guy is insisting. He goes like, boom, his mouth
do
goes.
Do me.
Make fun of me. Have you seen this one, Sam?
I love that sketch.
And the glee on his face.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, he's like, I skip over him,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what the thing is? You're insult comic, but you're being very careful to avoid. You see him and you don't want to go to him. Do me. And then I love that you finally like, okay, I forget what, but you do something pretty, the first one, you do an insult.
The first one, I think, if I remember correctly, the order, I think the first one is, okay, all right, then take it easy. You know, don't come haunt me in my dreams.
Yeah.
Because you look at Freddy Krueger.
Right.
It's like a mild Freddy Krueger joke and they turn on me immediately.
And he goes, too far.
Yeah.
Too far.
And then he's like,
the tears, they burn. I thought I could take it, but I can't. Oh my God.
March into spring with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered 500 megabits internet for $39.99 per month, plus a $100 gift card and price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with a free modem, free installation, and free Wi-Fi your way home. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and manage user access for all connected devices with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires May 6, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
I
remember there were sketches. There was one that Jordan and I did that I thought I was, I hoped it would work because I was giggling at the silliness in the moment. Because there'd be moments where you're trying to kind of make each other giggle, and then you have to hope and pray that not just the joyousness of it is coming across, but that the joke is actually coming across. Right. We did this small blackout sketch, like it was at a top of a show, and it was two couples, and the girls, it was the girls versus the boys, and they were playing celebrity, and we're talking trash to each other. We're talking trash, and then it's me and Jordan's turn, and they set the timer for a minute, and then I'm just like, okay, it was a taxi driver, because it was Robert De Niro. I'm like, okay, I'll be back. Oh, I'll just watch it. Singer. He's gay, but nobody knew it. But now he's got me. And then we cut, you know, the camera cuts to the wives, cuts to me, cuts to single back of him, and I go, gay singer, not, is it me? No, and the is it me is one of those you're like, can we take it that far already? Like, when do we accept how stupid he's going to be in the moment?
He's going to try and cover up, but then he's going to go back.
But he's going to go back to it. And if he goes back to it, are we going to laugh? And what Jordan did instinctively is there's this little thing you do with his mouth, which is what made the sketch so funny. He's like, is it me?
And I'm a little quivering lip.
No, it's not you. It's not you, Darnell. Latin. He's a Latin pop star. I'm not a Latin pop star. No. Yeah. No, you're not. You're not a Latin pop star. It's Enrique Iglesias, and he goes, oh man, I put that one in there too. Ding, and then it goes up. So the callback, all the mechanics work. It's just that you're always making sure you want to make sure that third. That the trigger point works, right. Like you said. Yeah, it's really, it's tough, but it's so satisfying when it works.
If it's good, pure silliness, it will last.
Yeah.
I really believe that. Like, I really believe
the
best sketches you guys have come up with, people are going to be sharing it, you know, 100 years from now.
The biggest blessing we got is because we were insistent on how long it was going to take to make the show, we had to do evergreen
stuff.
Right,
it's not about the day's news.
It's not about the day's news. It had to be evergreen. And so that ended up being our greatest blessing.
One of the things that's so, after, you know, whatever, the 26, 27 years, whatever, we've been doing this thing, so many times it'd be a huge story in the news in politics, and all the shows would be like, what's their take on it? And that would be the night that we had a gold miner stand up in the audience and say, I'm looking for the ghost of my turtle.
Right.
And then, you know, and we'd just be cackling, and at rehearsal I'd always say, and that's our take on the Lewinsky scandal.
On the Lewinsky scandal, you know, like, right.
But, you know, at the time, people would say like, oh, you blew it. And now I think, I don't know, it gets passed around now, and you don't have to explain.
Exactly. Like, I don't.
This is what the Exxon Valdez spill was.
Like, we think, because we're roiling in the middle of all of this right now, but in 2046, I'm hoping and praying that this becomes of the world, okay? That in 2046, that an impeachment joke is going to be super dated. It's not that the world's not going to change as much as we are all afraid it's going to change. You know, and you're right. It's like, this is, we just write sketches about the human condition. I mean, that, because, if I may, that sketch is about... It's about mourning and loss. I mean, I know it's a prospector, but
I never thought of it that way. I always thought of it that we had a prospector costume and we had a turtle puppet. And if you really want to know why we would do the sketch, it's because we had both of those things.
Yeah, both of those things.
It really was this random thing of, we've got a World War I German helmet with a spike, and we've got a watermelon that can explode,
that can explode
and foam can come out of it.
Yeah. Got it. Write it up.
You have had this weird experience of doing sketch comedy with a president of the United States, Barack Obama.
Amazing.
And there are moments like that where I'm fascinated because I'm a comedy fan. And when you would play Obama's angry alter ego.
The anger translator.
When you, and it was a very funny idea. It was really, and then you guys did it yourselves, and then Obama was like, hey, I want to do that.
Yep.
And okay, that's insane. But I'm also a history buff. So the idea that I have someone I can talk to who's like, wait, you did a really funny sketch with a U.S. president, something which isn't happening, by the way, these days.
Because
White House Correspondents' Dinner has been shut down. There's no more of that.
It's a completely different experience now. I don't know if previous presidents have ever. I mean, we know about senators doing their turns on SNL.
Yeah,
and former presidents and Clinton on Arsenio.
Yep.
But he
played the sax.
He played the saxophone.
Well, my question specifically is: you did a sketch with President Obama sitting while he's a sitting president.
Yeah.
So, do you give him notes? Do you say, you know what, the timing isn't right on that? Do you have the balls to do that? I'm just curious how much...
I tried to show as much requisite reverence as I should. But here's what happened. Here's what happened. I went into the West Wing, and I went to a room that's known as the Map Room, which was apparently FDR's favorite room.
And it's called the Improv and Sketch Workout Room. That's how much America has changed.
What are these long pieces of paper?
We need a microphone?
With squiggly lines on it. Hello, yeah, boy, I'll tell you what. I would love to.
We need a brick wall.
So I was standing at a podium, and I had my script, and I had been working on my script, and also I thought to myself, I'm also going to learn his lines. I'm going to learn my lines and his lines, because, you know, he's got some stuff on his mind, right? And he came into the room, and he's like, there he is, Keith, what's going on? And runs right, very tactile guy, runs over, gives me a hug. I freak out, because I'm like, is there a red dot on my forehead? He's hugging me!
Guess what?
He is hugging me!
Met him several times, never got the hug.
Never got the hug.
Never got the hug.
Oh, no.
I'm just putting it out there, President Obama, I never got the hug. But anyway, and you know, we've spent some time. Never got the hug. But anyway, continue.
I'm going to give him a call and see if he can be here next week. I'll just make it on my phone.
I've gotten the hug from Michelle.
Yeah.
No.
No, no hug from Barack.
President, very, yeah. Oh, you know what's so funny? I'm only interrupting, and then if this is bullshit, you can cut it out. But I remember this experience where I was at a fundraiser and I was the comedian at the fundraiser and Spielberg was throwing a giant event and Obama was the guest of honor and it's while he's president. So he comes in and Bruce Springsteen's musical guest. And I get up and do my thing and Bruce Springsteen does his thing. Then we all go back to the table and go around and the president shows up late. He does the same thing where he cordially greets all of us. Cordially greets all of us. And there's like, I'd say 11 of us.
Yeah.
And he goes around and shakes all of our hands. And then the very last one is Samuel L. Jackson. And he's wearing a Kangol cap, a white Kangol cap with a white suit. And Obama does this, their handshake goes on for 5 minutes.
It's like Central.
And the difference between what Liam Neeson and I got, what Samuel L. Jackson got, and you've never seen, like, the two whitest guys in the world were like, he was like, what the heck did we do? What the hell? I'm like, well, I think it's pretty clear what's happening here.
What's happening here? I don't understand.
It's like the Key and Peele sketch.
The Key and Peele sketch, where he's doing that. Like, brother, we in there now?
Yeah, no. But guess what? It really
is.
I saw it happen in real life. It was like, and it was like, bang. And it's like, okay, I don't have an ego about that. And he's being perfectly nice.
Of course, of course.
He's the president. Like, good to see you, Connor. Good to see you, Liam. Good to see you. And then Samuel L. Jackson, and it was pyrotechnics. And I've never more wanted to be someone else. And then I was looking at Samuel L. Jackson. I'm like, how do I get that? He was like, you are not ever getting that. But anyway, so you're in a room.
So the
president of the United States walks in.
Yeah. He's got his binder and he's reading and he goes through the whole thing. He does all the jokes in the preamble. And because usually he did it instead of a comedian doing it, right? And then I came in at the tail end of the piece. So we got to the tail end of the piece and it was cool watching him just make changes too. He's still so very kind. He's like, oh, I'm going to cut this here. All right, guys, I'm going to move this down here. And I was like, get it. Veto it. You know, going to veto that joke.
Based on his idea that it would, he was making comedy choices or just.
I think what he was doing, Conan, was making choices like that I'll use this comment as a joke in a speech I'm giving tomorrow. Ah. I'm going to use this comment in some remarks I'm going to make when I'm in Nebraska at the Corn Union.
This joke will go well in Prague.
In Prague, right? Exactly. Yeah. When I go to Bratislava, this is going to murder. And so, you know, and so he was like moving jokes around. And so he goes, "All right, Key, now we're going to do this script here." And I was like, "You got it, sir. Absolutely." He's like, "No, I don't need, you know, Dave writes some funny stuff." David Litt is the guy who wrote the copy. And he goes, "So I don't want to see you breaking up here, okay?" And I said, "You got it, sir. I'm on it." And I get into my Luther stance. And the very first line, he goes, "So to continue, I'd like to introduce my anger translator, Luther." And my first line is, "Hang on to your lily white butts." So he says his line, right? So he goes, "My anger translator, Luther." I said, "Hang on to your lily white butts." The president goes, "Oh, you got me going now." Okay. And I think I might have even said, "I don't know, sir, you got to keep a straight face." And he was like, "You got me." So he laughed. And so that was the closest I got to giving him a note. And there was one thing where I might have said, "I'll stand. Is it okay if I stand on this side? Would you prefer if I stand on this side? I think I can get more." Like I was going to launch my legs in the air and jump and stuff like that. And that's the closest thing we came to a note. I didn't tell him what I was going to do. I asked him what he wanted. He was cool. "You're cool on that side." And then the other thing people used to say after I finished doing it was that there is a moment where I touch him. And it's like, it just feels like it's not allowed. You know what I mean? And I touched him. But he was so amazing as a straight man. I can't even describe how amazing he was. He knew, he had the timing perfectly.
Yeah.
I didn't, and only I'm saying that now because I was so aware of it because I knew his lines.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, he's so good at this thing and he's so good at doing the speech here and kind of just scooping words and coming back. Like almost whole paragraphs sometimes where he's talking to the crowd. He's really orating. And I'm like, he's got notes. He's not even looking at the prompter shield jammers.
You know what's really funny is that...
it was amazing.
First time I did the Correspondence Center, it was Clinton. I went first and things went really well and I was very happy. And I thought, man, I'm it's just good to go first.
Yeah,
it's the president.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Second time I sign up is Obama. And what happens is you're sitting there and the president goes first, and he is loaded up with the greatest jokes in the world.
Yeah.
Now, I really liked my jokes. I have really good jokes, but he's just loaded up. And he also, the thing has progressed, especially under Obama. They started adding stuff that like late night comedians have, which is pictures to pop, like they have in Weekend Update.
They had
like, you know, magic tricks and all this craziness. And so he goes up and he's really fucking amazing. And he just destroys.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and also the White House doesn't tell you what you'll say, like, what areas are you covering? And all you hear back from the White House.
Right,
you hear from the White House is, we're just going to cover some stuff. Don't you worry about it. And you're like, oh, man, you're going first. I don't even know.
I have no idea. Right, yeah.
So I put all my stuff on blue cards so I could flip it around and take stuff out. So I'm just taking blue cards out while he's doing his thing and destroying. Every now and then, like every third joke, I'd be like, "And this comes out," but at least I have another one, and I can slide it in.
I'm
doing that
during the speech,
and he's absolutely destroying because he's so good at it. And then he literally does like a mic drop. You know, he's just like, "I'm out," you know, "Obama out," and he walks away, and the crowd, I mean, they're delirious. He's the leader of the free world, and he was just really funny and just destroyed. Had the hottest set you've ever seen anyone have, and then this voice of God just goes, "Conan O'Brien." And that's it. And then you walk up and you can hear your own shoes. And you know that the White House is like, you know what?
Sheesh, this is a long dance.
Yeah.
But it went well.
Yes,
it went well. Yeah.
Well, you have to rein in for that one.
Yeah, it went great. But Obama crushed it. But you did really well, too. I mean, I didn't mean
why
to.
Why did you have to go back to Obama crushed it? We established that Obama crushed it.
Everybody's under the impression.
And that was the part where you lean in and say, "Conan,
you did good too."
Oh, wow.
Solid.
Solid praise.
But
solid praise.
But I got off and I was like, I don't need to ever do that. Ever do that again.
Yeah, because he's already a gifted orator, but he's a gifted orator in every across the orating spectrum.
And he's the coolest guy in the room.
He's the coolest guy that ever lived. Yeah, always the coolest guy in the room. And he has the perfect blend. A friend of mine told me this through a friend of mine who wrote a book about the thing that one of the things that gets you elected is strength and warmth. And he has the perfect amount of both strength and warmth. He does. Mm-hmm. Like, it's some people have too much strength, some people have too much warmth, and it's not enough. He's the perfect blend. I got to tell you a joke that I thought was funny, a very great visual joke. Because memory jogged in my mind when you hosted the NFL Honors a few years ago.
Yep.
And I was watching your hosting job
and
Seth's job.
Right.
And I'm a huge football fan, so it was a crazy thing for me. And I remember the year that you did it, you had a great joke where you were showing images of things or animals or people that looked like a football player. And to this day, there was an ice cream cone with a chocolate swirl, soft serve swirl,
yeah.
And then you showed a picture of Antonio Brown's hair, and it murdered Conan.
Yeah,
it was such a perfect joke. I know we're gonna cut this because I just said Antonio Brown, but it's like, or maybe it's okay.
That was
maybe
back when you could have a lot of fun with Antonio Brown.
Right, exactly.
Who knew?
Who knew?
You know?
Oh my god.
OJ was in the Naked Gun movies,
and it did okay.
I think they've taken him out.
Remember,
now.
I think they
edited him out.
All the Naked Gun movies are now 86 minutes long. That's an easy evening. Yeah, yeah.
They go like, "Where's Norberg?" And they just cut to a crab. Yeah, and then you just hear a bad voiceover going, "You mean Norberg, the crab?" Yes, Norberg, the crab. Well, he won't figure much into this plot. Onward.
Onward. And I like that whoever that guy is, it was a Leslie Nielsen talk-alike.
Yeah.
He goes like, "I wasn't getting any work. I wasn't getting any work." Out of the blue. Two sessions. when we did Naked Gun 33 and a third, that was a doozy of a day. But I had to do all of those, yeah. That's so crazy.
So that's, I mean, Norberg. I love that
Why was his name Norberg?
Well,
can I ask another question?
I don't think they gave it that much thought.
Danny Glover's last name Murtaugh.
Yeah.
That's about the most German Anglo-Saxon name.
Well, I think he's Bavarian in the film.
He's Bavarian.
He's from the Black Forest. He's wearing Lederhosen.
Set it right here.
They shot 6 whole weeks where he's in Lederhosen. And then they decided we gotta fix this.
They said, "Richard Donner, what are we thinking with the Lederhosen?" And he goes, "Nah, cut it.
Let's start again."
I always found that interesting.
But keep the name.
Yeah.
It must be Murtaugh.
It has to be Murtaugh. Jawohl! it's so strange that his name was Roger Murtaugh. Anyway, he looked more like a Riggs to me. He looked more like a Riggs.
You know what? Now I can't watch those films. Nothing any of those other actors has done will put me off those films,
That's what takes you out. That's what takes you out.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus. I'll tell you how I grew up. When I grew up, I was never quite sure, hey, wait, what am I? Like, I knew that I wasn't quite sure, are we middle class? Are we upper middle class? We live in this neighborhood that is a nice street, but then there's public housing over here. I go to public school, meaning in a good way. And my later talked to my dad about it. My dad said, I always liked that it wasn't quite clear what we were. Like, we're Irish Catholic kids, but we don't play hockey. We're kind of nerds. My friends are across the spectrum. I just didn't have this solid sense of who I was, I think in a good way. And I think that helped me. I think that almost helped me. I don't know if you had a similar experience.
I had a similar experience. And I'm not trying to make the, what is the background? What's the cauldron, the social cauldron that has to have the right ingredients to make comedians?
There's only one.
But
so you better get it right.
Yeah. But I also did not have a sense that we were lower middle class or middle class. I didn't understand that. And I lived in an extremely diverse neighborhood in Detroit, which is at the time I was born, was surprising. It was a city where 80% of the people were African American. But I lived in a neighborhood where we had Asian neighbors and the gay neighbors and black neighbors and white neighbors. And I'm biracial. My parents were an interracial couple. They had interracial couple friends. And so I had a very similar background in that way. And we were sheltered to a certain degree. I went to a Catholic school, a private Catholic school.
Catholic school.
I was raised diehard Catholic. Altar boy, choir, guitar mass, the whole nine. I did all that stuff when I was a kid, and so that's informed a lot of how I see the world and everything like that. But I went to high school. I went to high school in the suburbs. It's a very fun fact. My local high school that I would have gone to would have been Mumford High School, which is where Jerry Bruckheimer went to high school.
Oh.
Jerry Bruckheimer is a Detroiter, and it is the T-shirt that Axel Foley used to wear. In the Beverly Hills Cop movies, Axel Foley, the character, went to Mumford High School, which means Axel Foley would have grown up in my neighborhood. But a little fun
the
fact.
The original name for Axel Foley was Axel Schlittenslauter. True story. They also shot a whole 9 weeks.
That's
dressed
right.
as a cuckoo clock.
From the Dusseldorf. Yeah, not the ones from Baden-Baden.
I am from Detroit, and I don't understand your strange Beverly Hills ways.
You know, we're going to go a different way.
We're going to go a different way with this, yeah.
Let's get Eddie, try it this way.
Fulenkensteiner!
I think we're going to change it from Fulenkensteiner just to Foley. We're just going to go with Foley, if you don't mind. You're cool with that, Jerry? Bruckheimer! No, I'm kidding. But, so I also had that kind of an upbringing. You know, my parents were social workers, so I didn't, maybe halfway through high school, I kind of went, oh! Well, even in grade school, I had a couple of friends who lived in a very affluent neighborhood called Palmer Woods, and they lived just one neighborhood south of us. But again, it was affluent African-Americans and a few white people that lived in that neighborhood at the time. And I did understand that they had more money than us, but I never thought we wanted for anything.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, I remember, you know what I mean? That sense that there are people, I think, that grow up in communities where they're hyper aware of we don't have money, or also on the other side of the spectrum, I get a BMW when I'm 16.
When I'm 16.
Mm-hmm. And I could never quite get a bead on, do we have anything? Or, I mean, my dad's a research scientist, and my mom went back to work later. And, you know, we live in a nice house. My dad got a used car from a motel that has the and didn't paint over the insignia of the motel on the side.
Really?
And that's what I'm driving when I learn how to drive.
Really?
It's a Ford LTD that says Pine like Manor Inn on the side and has it from Maine. And I'm just not clear on what's going on
here. Was it also his car?
Yeah, it was the family car.
Yeah.
And people would, and my mother was horrified. My mother was always trying to be proper. And people thought there was a big homeless shelter downtown in Boston that sounded very similar to the name of this motel.
Oh, to Pine Valley Grove.
Yeah, whatever. And so my mother would, so people used to say so you work at the homeless shelter. And my mother would be like, we do not work at the homeless shelter. And I'm like, just gotta have someone just paint over.
Yeah, like what's,
paint anything over that.
Yeah, even just black paint. Let's just go with a matte Bondo. Yeah.
Just say you got hit
right.
symmetrically on both sides in an exact area.
Very precise hit.
But I later on was talking to my dad about it, and he said, I always thought it was good that you kids didn't have this fixed idea about what we
mm-hmm,
were,
mm-hmm.
meaning I just had no idea.
Because then it still allows your imagination to roam a bit. I think it doesn't allow you to think, I'm only going to be able to be this or that.
Right.
So even if the encouragement wasn't necessarily there all the time, I thought to myself, my parents had a wide enough view, and I got to go to my friend's house and watch television on their parents' TVs and see what records they collected. You know, my parents were not big music people, but it was nice to live in an area where I felt a little bit like I knew what I could do. I knew I was going to college. That was a good thing. That was something I learned later in life too, is that, oh wow, everybody doesn't go to college. But they were kind of hell bent that we were going to college.
Right. And you
I knew that was something I was working toward. I was gonna go to college. But then I think there is, when there's a common, there is a commonality to those environments that we grew up in. And also you get to learn, you get to spend time in different stratas. I didn't feel as uncomfortable around people who had less money than us, but I felt very uncomfortable being around people who had more money than us. Eventually, eventually. But when I was younger, I probably had more awareness of it than you did, maybe in some degree.
Sure.
Yeah. I think more awareness than you did, because did you feel, Conan, that you had this sense that I can do anything, or I'll be able to be, I mean, when I did you know you could be that you're like, comedy writing's a job.
That came really late. I mean,
at school?
In college, I started. I didn't realize it was a profession.
Me either.
And I'm sure you didn't either. And so
me
many
either.
Of us.
Yeah.
And I think now, because of the way things have changed, there are kids who at six have a reel. They have 800,000 hours of sketches that they've put up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And they
and
have
their parents aren't in the industry. Their parents are not in the industry.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly. And I used to just think, well, I can't. I live in Boston. I can't be in show business.
That's me too. I live in Detroit. I can't be in show business. I didn't say it on the show because I didn't want to take – I wanted us to get kind of through the topics.
Right.
But I remember seeing – my dad was a very stoic guy. So watching my father laugh so hard, the thing that made him – that really got him was Eddie Murphy impersonating Stevie Wonder.
Oh,
that's what really got my dad. And but I was just like – so what was I? What was I, 12? I was 11 or 12, 10, 11, 12 at his heyday, because he was there from 80 to 84, Eddie was. And I remember going, well, now I guess they pay him for that. Like that's probably a job. My brain understood that's a job. Like that has to be his job. Could I do that job?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what I was alluding to, is that he is in a way responsible. He's the first, because of him, I got into Richard Pryor. Because of him, I got into Peter Sellers. But I went, that's a job. That's on television. I know they
pay people.
I still
don't think it's a job. Like I do it and it's a very hard thing to describe. We do this. We do work really hard.
Yes, yes.
But whenever I'm flying somewhere and they want me to fill out a card and it says occupation, I don't know what to write. And I don't want to write entertainer, because that feels really highfalutin.
Yeah,
and also, if I wrote entertainer, I'd write entertainer parentheses at times, meaning I can be entertaining.
Yeah,
I know I can.
Right.
And then there are other times where I'm less so. But they don't want you to write all that on the little line.
No, they don't. There's not, the line's not that long. I mean, it's usually about 3 inches tops.
I can turn a line of whimsy to my advantage. Sir, can you please just write one thing? Hold on, I'm not done yet.
Maker of frippery. Maker of linguistic frippery.
If the conditions are correct.
If the conditions
are correct. Comma, and the conditions do need to be correct.
Comma.
Comma. Then I'll bring you mirth.
I shall bring you mirth.
You know, but yeah, I find the whole thing... I find it to be magical that
it is.
We're in this.
It really is.
And I'll say this as a way of because I got to bring this ship in into port. You know, where the ship, the conversation is a ship.
Well, it is. It is.
And it needs to go into port.
It has to go into port.
There's a lot of, it's not to refuel. There's a lot of shit that it's built up.
We're definitely wet docking.
And we need
and then you have to clean the barnacles.
We have to offload the feces.
Well, and, it's good because I'm looking at my watch and... I gotta go.
Come on, Billy D, please. This is an important scene. Is where you turn against, you stick up for the rebellion in this scene. It's a key scene. We've gotta get it.
I'm sorry, George, what did you say? I was looking at Kerry. What's this white guy's name behind me with the machinery on his bald head?
We don't know.
Who's that guy? Who's the... I just have a question. Who's the two-legged, 7-foot wolf? And am I supposed to understand what he's saying? Sounds like he's coughing. What's the name again?
It's Chewbacca.
All right, Chewbacca.
No.
One more time. I'll lock it in. One more time.
Chewbacca.
Chewbacca.
Perfect. Absolute joy.
Oh my
man,
God, this was...
No, really, this is an absolute joy.
It is for me.
Having you here, and
gosh.
One of the magical things about this podcast is getting to say, man, would I love to just hang out.
I know.
Seriously, would I love to hang out with Keegan-Michael Key and just screw around and... And then that will go out into the world.
And the world gets to see that. Yeah. I mean, it's like...
They won't see it. No, they won't. But they'll hear it.
Oh, no, they definitely will see it with their ears.
Oh.
What the fuck?
I made it the whole show without swearing. Can you cut that? I think
we're
going
to add swears.
We're going to add swears.
We're just going to add, and it's going to be clearly not even you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right around when I said 50 cent words, like when I said quotidian.
Quotidian.
I said, fucking.
I'm just going to lay them
quotidian
in.
Quotidian fucking? You mean boring intercourse? Quotidian fucking. You know, it's
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was fantastic. And it's a nice warm room. These people in this room are, they seem to be having a good time.
Well, you know
well.
What? No one, you know what's great? No one fakes it here.
It's
because many times I thought I'd been really funny and I get nothing over here from this band. They don't care.
They don't care.
They don't give
good.
It up.
It's good. You don't need the yes men and women. You don't need the yes people.
Nope.
I would kill for a yes. Oh, you're sorry. Thank you so much, sir. I salute you.
Conan. I salute you.
Oh, morning. How'd you sleep?
Amazing.
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 When did they get here?
I didn't even notice.
Mommy, I want pancakes.
Get the best sleep of your life with a little help from the experts at Ashley. Discover the all-new Tempur-Adapt Collection by Tempur-Pedic. Designed with body-conforming technology and motion absorption that helps minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt Collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Who feels like a voicemail?
I do.
Are you really, you know, sometimes you talk like a child therapist.
Well, yeah, because I'm dealing with an ill child.
You sound great.
Voicemail. Who feels like a voicemail?
Excellent. Much better. I do.
Me. Will, play the one about socks.
Hello, Chapa. I'm so sorry. My name is Fiona. I think you're the coolest person ever. And my question is, what is your opinion with sleeping with socks on? Okay, that's all. All right, you're awesome. Bye.
Oh. Hey there, Chapa. Fiona, thank you so much, Fiona, for picking up on... That's the way a long time ago I realized you don't have to know people's names. You can just call everybody Chapa. And so I just do, and people accept it. It's the craziest thing. Yeah. It's Sony, you're with me all the time, and I'm like, people go like, hey, Conan, I'd be like, hey there, Chapa.
Yeah, you
and
do.
People are fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just like, hey, Conan O'Brien called me Chapa.
Yeah, so, that's working for me anyway. We'll never know when I've lost my mind, because the simple test is, do you know everyone's name around you? And I don't. But thanks for pointing that out. Yes, sleeping with socks. I run hot. I run real hot. And always have. I've got a high metabolism, so I'm always burning up. And so I can't wear socks when I go to sleep. I'm fine if someone else does it, but
I personally
can't do what? You're not cool with it?
I'm not cool with socks.
What do you mean?
In a bed. It makes me, I don't like it.
Oh, you think it's like unhygienic or something?
No, it's not. That's part of it.
Oh, also not sexy. Like if I was with someone for the first time and there was going to be some sexualisms, I would not be wearing socks, obviously, because it's very asexual to wear socks in that situation, I think. You know, we're going to do it. And then swish, swish, swish as you walk up to the bed. I'm naked now, except from my ankles down, and I'm coming to ravage you. Swiss, 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 swiss. Let me climb into the bed now. Static electricity. So no, I think it's a mistake there.
Do you announce what's happening as you're doing it?
And is that what a sexualism is?
That's called my sexualism.
I'm going to come in the bed now.
Now, I always like to narrate when I'm in a sexual mood. And so that's what I do, as I say to my wife, or when I was single, any lucky winner.
Winner.
I'd say, here I come. And it's just not a good time to be wearing socks. But I think if you're in a long committed relationship, if your testosterone level has dropped, if you're ending that long dormant phase of your life where it's just the long slide into the grave, you can wear socks if you like. I don't like it because I get too hot. And were I to put socks on, I think my temperature would spike to about 140 degrees. I think huge amounts of heat pour out through my toes in the night, like beams, laser beams shooting out of each one.
So no, I reject the idea of socks in the bed. And that's my personal stance. Fiona, curious to hear what your thoughts are. And, you know, you can always call us back.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sonam Ovsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Oh, morning. How'd you sleep?
Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing.
When did they get here?
I didn't even notice.
Mommy, I want pancakes.
Get the best sleep of your life with a little help from the experts at Ashley. Discover the all-new Tempur-Adapt Collection by Tempur-Pedic, designed with body-conforming technology and motion absorption that helps minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt Collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.